Okay, back to this bit of meaning. I'm just trying to pick out the richest parts. What we've just seen is, okay, he's realizing that imagery can, a symbol has many levels of meaning. That might be the best way to put it. And that idea is repeated, second column now on 268. The anchorite's first comments, third line, succession of words does not have only one meaning. The anchorite then says a little farther down, I observe that you are wholly inexperienced in divine matters. Here I am.
Is that the same paragraph?
Say no. The anchorite's a second comment. This bad superstition is far from me. I observe that you are wholly inexperienced in divine matters.
What was Jung writing at the time?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
You're right, but he had not yet written. Had he written Symbols of Transformation?
That's what I was wondering.
I guess he had written Symbols of Transformation. That was 1912 to 1913.
This is puzzling.
Why?
Well, that he doesn't feel he has, sees things symbolically, so to speak. What this is saying.
I don't think it's saying you don't see things symbolically. Yeah. I think it's saying you don't know the full range of what symbols can communicate. Now, we read Symbols of Transformation, but see, that's already a 1952 rewrite. It would be something interesting to try to read the first volume. It is out, the first original 1913 volume, and compare the two. And I would suspect that certainly in 1913, even in the 1952 volume, the idea of the teleology of the image is really not explored. The self is hardly, I mean, it's just not there. The idea of the self isn't there.
Right.
So that's what I would get from this, that when the anchorite says, you don't understand the full range of symbolism, when he says you are wholly inexperienced in divine matters, that's showing Jung that that when he's been talking about matter and spirit, he still has a long way to go to understand what spirit is. He certainly has acknowledged its existence, but he hasn't adequately come to grips with its full range of powers and what it can do. I think that's what's going on here. See, he's talking to somebody who knows spirit only, so that he can help himself define spirit better. So when he talks about matter and spirit, his use of the word spirit is adequate to the full range of what the spirit is, although he's going to get the spirit much differently. But it's still the spirit. That's where I go with this. Sound okay to everybody? So now the anchorite tells us about his development. He was a rhetorician and a philosopher in the city of Alexandria. That's the anchorite's third passage, five lines. Why is that important? Because pretty soon we're going to be defining what is this spirit. The John, maybe I should read John right before we go any further, talks about the Word, the Logos. What is the Logos? Let me just read you the passage that we'll be dealing with.
We might have a Bible. Okay. I don't know, is this a liberal translation? Oh, RSV, okay.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him. So the Word in John is the source of everything. Remember, the Greek is logos. It has much wider meaning than our like vocabulary word. What has come into being in him was life. So it equates word and life. And the life was the light. So now we have word, life, and light all being synonymous. And the light and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. That's what we'll be working with.
That's a little bit different version of the statement, isn't it? The other way it says, and the darkness comprehended not.
Comprehended not.
Is that King James? Oh.
I would imagine it's the King James version.
Well, comprehensive is more traditional.
Well,
this is a new revised standard, so they may have changed it.
Mm-hmm. What was the wording they used?
Overcome it.
That's different.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
in a way it does make more sense. Mm-hmm. For much, I mean, comprehend it not, it would seem like the light is more comprehensive than darkness.
Not comprehensive, comprehending.
Understand. The darkness doesn't do.
Darkness doesn't comprehend light.
Darkness can't understand light.
Right. So light is more comprehensive.
Well, comprehensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah. Darkness. And comprehending.
Mm-hmm. But that feels a lot different than open.
Yes. But even they refer to understanding. Let's go on. See, I kind of forget what I just read this morning. But I think in the text they talk about. Oh no, sorry. Comprehending is the way they talk about it. Here.
Gary, wasn't there a whole section in Zarathustra where Jung talked about the Word?
That's what we're going to be dealing with.
Okay.
What is the Word?
Okay.
That's what we're dealing with.
I thought that was really an helpful section.
Yeah. I'm thinking, will it help if I give you the summary? Might help if I give you the summary before we do it, at least partially. Some of you heard this before, so bear with me. But I think the German puts it most accurately in the word Geist, G-E-I-S-T. Geist can mean mind, or it can mean spirit. So a mental illness is a geistliche Krankheit. Krankheit is sickness. If somebody's geistig begabt, that means they could express themselves very well in mental categories. Geistig is mind there, and begabt is gifted. And Jung has made a great deal of that in several places, that originally mind was the ability to understand the spirit. Originally, that Geist was both the mind that understood the spirit and the spirit which was understood. Now, we have since separated that meaning. The mind is what functions logically, and the spirit is the non-rational movement of life from within. That doesn't exist in the original use of the word. That's a modern understanding. So likewise, originally, word was this dynamic power that creates life. Think of the way a poem moves you. That's more the original use of the word, word. But it's come to be just any sentence is made up of words. It's lost the emotional and spiritual depth. I mean, the difference between telling somebody, I love you, versus, oh, I owe $13 on my parking ticket. Originally, and so what Jung is coming to grips with is what this thing they're calling the word, the logos, it is something much bigger than just words. It's what works through words. It's what, let's say, if you make a promise to somebody, that those words mean something. They carry weight. It's not what you say. It's the promise that's conveyed by the word, where what we think of words is a Nabisco commercial. We've lost that power that works through words. Now, I went into all that because the anchorite says in his first, second, third speech, go down one, two, where it says, unfortunately, then go down one, two, three, four, five lines. I was a rhetorician and a philosopher in the city of Alexandria. He's saying, I once thought word was words. I didn't realize that word, that logos, carried a power. Or, again, I'm trivializing a bit, but I didn't realize there was a difference between saying, I love you, and I'll get the chicken for dinner. But when Christianity comes along, you see, they begin to realize, my God, there is this logos that we thought was a mental process. Is that mental process is just the outer shell. There is a power working through that which we comprehend in words, but it is something far more than words. It's spirit. So Jung is now stumbling on what he will later define as spirit.
I read that paragraph a little differently when he's talking about being a philosopher in the city of Alexandria, and he's saying he conveyed the ideas of Philo, and it's Philo's idea that the facet of God knowable through reason is the Logos. So he was preaching that idea of words, the word being a power.
Yeah, but look down where he says, I wove an atrocious web of words in which I ensnared not only my listeners, but also myself. So he's realizing that whatever he's making of these experiences was just mental.
That it became mental. Cerebral.
Yeah, that he never realized there was anything besides the cerebral.
Well, he attributes it to a facet of God.
Yeah.
Of God and to creation of life and light, and then he's saying that eventually it became a web of words.
No, I think originally it was a web of words. He never realized it was anything but a web of words. At first, he's going to change. He's telling Jung where he started out.
Well, interestingly, I come from a very high church, Illinois, and the priest in our church started every mass, every Sunday, with reading, saying that from memory, the first book. So that's how important.
The word.
And the word, How full it is.
How full it is and how empty it has become. I remember when I was in graduate school, all those moments where I thought, oh, I can't do this. We had a New Testament class, and the guy went, he passed out an article. And he went on for the whole class talking about giving and sharing of yourself and, the joy of letting something in you go into the other and not counting, keeping score. At the end of the class, he says, now pass those papers back because they're mine and I don't want to get it printed anywhere else. See, all the words were there.
Yeah.
But not the meaning.
That's right.
Yeah, and nobody reacted. I think, what the rhetorician would have said everything right, but not realized it had to translate into the way we live. And when Christianity comes along, it links up those two, what you say and the power that was in the words of that theology professor turning into life. And I think the reason this guy is doing it, he's saying to Jung, you're back in the rhetorician phase, just like I was. So he's establishing a rapport.
Wasn't there a section early on where he was talking about a philosopher, what a true philosopher was, is someone who lives what he sees?
Yeah.
And that would be where a word actually had the energy of spirit.
Yeah, right.
I know it's in here.
I can't find it. But what's new here is that... I think it's, if you've done inner work, you realize that this logos has a tremendous power of its own. And he's coming to grips with that fact. What gives structure to language like a word does is the same thing that can give structure to our life and make it meaningful. There's this structuring capacity which works mentally, but also it works completely in our being to shape our lives. There's a shaping factor that is independent of the ego. That's what he's coming to grips with. But the anchorite is just getting started.
Could we say word is a symbol as well for something?
Yeah.
So before we were saying that the anchorite was one who had cut himself off from life and instinct. And so now here the anchorite shows a new aspect of himself.
Well, he's just saying where he came from.
No, I mean in saying that words should not become gods. That. So are we saying that the anchorite is now leading Jung towards life? Is that what we're saying?
Well, he's leading Jung toward the spirit. And when Jung understands the spirit, it will help him understand how his experiences contain a life-affirming message. But we just started. All we're doing is clarifying the difference between, you might say, word with a small W and word with a big W. And what the anchorite is saying to Jung is, you know, I once didn't know there's a difference. And you certainly don't either. And things like, he says of Philo, he belongs to the language artists. But words should not become gods. What I think we're going to is getting the distinction between labeling something and thinking you know it and living it. In both cases, there is a description. But in the first case, the description substitutes for the experience. And in the second case, the description evokes and motivates and moves you in the direction of what it's describing. That's the real spirit. Both can be expressed by articulation.
Looks like we've tried to define the form to something that is indescribable.
Yeah, right. The Logos is Christ. Indescribable. Yet we're trying to find, what does that mean in individual experience for a psychologist?
And yet that's what was done by the how many apostles wrote it. They wrote what they understood in their own gospels. Each one saying something different, but each one claiming that this was for the God. Whereas, as you said, it's indescribable. That Philo guy says that the word is that the Bible can be taken literally and allegorically.
Mm-hmm.
Felt that was important, not just to take it literally.
You also should say metaphorically, because allegory is just one-on-one. Wonderful for another thing.
Well,
in allegory, one thing represents another thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in metaphor, it has much force. It can have a lot, you know, represent a lot more things, because it is the one.
On many levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, he was just going to two levels. Either literal or allegory. That's his
choice. Well, see, certainly there is something to be learned from Philo. But at the same time, it's like, I believe the anchorite is saying, and Philo doesn't really understand the depths of his own message.
Right. Yeah.
We're never doubting that he's got something to teach us about mm-hmm. levels of interpretation. But it's a mental exercise.
So when you're arguing about Karen, you both supposed to find the name.
I always think
So you okay so far? Well, all we've done is say there is logos and there's logos. There's word and there's word. Now it gets complicated. This is where I get lost. So pitch in here. Top of 269. I ask you, was this logos a concept, a word? It was a light. I was referring to the passage. Indeed a man, and lived among men. You see, Philo only lent John the word so that John would have at his disposal the word logos alongside the word light to describe the Son of Man. John gave to the living men the meaning of the logos, but Philo gave logos as the dead concept that usurped life, even the divine life. Through this, the dead does not gain life, and the living is killed. And this was also my atrocious error. So he's just said what we just said. Does that make sense to everybody?
But he's had the realization.
The anchorite has.
The anchorite has had the realization.
He's had the realization.
That was what I was trying to...
Yeah, oh, he's had the realization. He's just starting back from where he was. And I think he's saying, and you're back where I was. And here's the journey I made, and here's the journey you've got to make. Mm-hmm. This is these paragraphs now, or where I get confused. Jung says, I see what you mean. This thought is new to me. See, so he's getting an awareness of what the living spirit is. You might say, learning the difference between what the spirit is in theory and then being seized to grow in a certain particular way. Until now, it always seemed to me as if it were exactly that which was meaningful in John, namely, that the Son of Man is the Logos, and in that he thus elevates the lower to the higher spirit, to the world of the Logos. But you lead me to see the matter conversely, namely that John brings the meaning of the Logos down to man.
Well, God, the Logos, got a God. Now he's saying, brings the meaning of the Logos down to man.
How does the Logos get down to man?
Well, see, that's Christ. Christ comes from God down.
So maybe it means his ministry on earth?
That's what I think it means. But now, psychologically, if I've got it right, I think he does both. Anyway, John bringing the meaning of the Logos down would mean that you get a concrete realization of what the self wants you to do, or you get a concrete realization of what the spirit wants you to do, or you get a concrete realization of how to live your potential practically. Practically. Now that may sound like nuts to you, but I remember a situation, I think I've told you about this, this guy was an extremely gifted musician. Young guy. And refused to pursue, had a degree in it, a very good school, but refused to pursue a career, saying chicks don't like starving artists. That was his rationale. And in his dream, he had a dream of a sanctuary in which all benches were turned with their back to the altar. And he didn't stick around when I told him. And a couple of months later, he was arrested on 4 counts of attempted murder.
This was Dr.
You haven't heard this before. Same idea. See, that the Logos, his Logos was a musician. I mean, I'll tell you, if you figure out who it is, keep your mouth shut. I don't think you would, but I mean, he was an opera singer. And you just knew the moment you saw that guy and you heard him open his mouth, he was a powerful voice. Just on the phone, it hit me. Holy smokes. Who am I talking to here? He was an opera singer to his tippy toes. He refused to do it. So, you see, when you see how somebody is so gifted and trained, see, that's the Logos.
See, that didn't make sense, though.
Well, it doesn't matter whether it makes sense or not. It's what he was thinking.
You said that is the Logos.
That's the Logos.
That's the temporal Logos, isn't it?
I think the Logos, in the way Jung is working with it, is always temporal. That his pattern, his eternal pattern, I would say he was probably born to be an opera singer.
Yeah.
In that sense, non-temporal. Was incarnated in him as a possibility, that possibility is the Logos. And the fact that he didn't, and that is shown by the fact in the dream that all the benches were turned with their back to the altar. So the altar is his divine self. That's his Logos. Because he wouldn't take seriously who he was.
So in other words, you're sort of saying that his talent, his inborn talent, was his
Logos.
Reality.
Yeah, his Logos. Yes. And the dream says it too, because it uses religious imagery to personify his disregard of himself. It's the altar that was being ignored. His own inner altar, he was ignoring his own inner altar by refusing to be a musician.
Aren't very talented people often that way?
Well, my point is to give you an example of what it means to bring the word down. To have sung in an opera company would have been to bring that Logos down into time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's an extreme case, but I think we all do it in smaller ways. We don't take our talent seriously. We don't take our opportunities seriously. And the things that have been given for us to do and be and become, we refuse. For one of a variety of reasons. You don't make enough money. It's not popular. It's too hard. I'm lazy. My parents don't like it. My neighbors won't like it. The reasons are infinite. But that's what Jung is, I think, coming to grips with here, that this Logos thing, it's the precursor of the self. It's something that is given to us. Now, where does that come from? Well, who knows? But it's not something we create. It's something we discover. And the fact that that dream symbolized his turning his back on himself as turning his back on the altar is the kind of symbolism Jung wrestled with and realized, my God, that's the meaning of the Logos today. When I'm helping people become their potential, I am bringing the Logos down to earth. And what he's getting clear here is, and there is something that is Logos. And it is the current meaning of what we once called the religious life, as shown by that dream of the church and the altar. The Mass now represents the fulfillment of our potential. And when you don't fulfill your potential, you see it in dreams as ignoring the meaning of the Mass, which is the Logos. You know, the transubstantiation is making the Logos something that exists in the bread and wine. Does that make sense?
So we're saying that to bring the Logos up, and then he also speaks of bringing it down, but those, so to bring it up, you equate to a concrete, no, to bring it down, you equate to a concrete realization of what the Spirit wants and to live its practicality.
Yeah.
To bring it up, I suppose, would be the transformation of instinct.
Well,
but instinct has something within it that wants to transform, to evolve, and that would be the bringing up.
It could be. I went differently.
Okay.
And where I get so confused here is that he puts them as either ors, and I think it's the same thing. And
well, it's both at the same time.
It's both at the same time. In other words, to this guy, he thought, I can just disregard my talent. That would be like a Jew in the 3rd century BC saying, I can disregard the Ten Commandments. That was a commandment from God, or that was as if a commandment from God. So what I understand by raising the Logos is that you realize that the plan that is in you is sacred. You can't mess with it. All the years of millennia of fear and punishment around the law hasn't gone away. It just gone inside. And it's not the Ten Commandments that carry that role. It's the Spirit now that carries that role. And you can see that man could not avoid himself and try to kill 4 people. In rage. But he was really angry at himself for not being who he is.
Somebody wrote a piece about Marlon Brando just like that didn't value his talent and abused his body and became morbidly obese and unwell. I think children are dead.
I mean, somebody wrote a piece like that. He was good in his great time. I don't think it would take a very long time to get the word in people that is not elevated to where it could have been. I think everyone of us has to deal with this. Everyone.
I mean, it does come down to whether you value the spirit of death or the spirit
of mind. Yeah. And I think what he's beginning to get an idea of, you know, that spirit of the depths, that's a demand from within me to become myself. And that is a sacred task. Why use the word sacred? Because you see in that guy's example of that guy, how disregarding it was depicted in religious terms. And the terrific consequence that followed, the tragic consequences that followed from his having disregarded it.
So just to sum this up, to get it straight in my mind, you're saying that to bring the Logos down or to raise it It's basically the same thing, but seen from a different perspective.
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. To bring it down is to, let's say to bring it up is, this is my sense, to bring it up is to realize how your task, your talent, is God-given. Mm-hmm. You read existential philosophy, oh, you actualize your potential, tra-la-la-la. But, and this is not all that different, but what this adds is, and that is your sacred duty to do that. What's the difference? Well, I think you see when you avoid your sacred duty, the consequences are horrendous. Find a good Jungian.
I hear you.
I don't know about that, but and then the bringing it down is bringing it up means realizing what serious business this is, and bringing it down is and then making that real.
It's the truest thing. So the other question, Dr. Newman would say, pray and meditate and honor your dreams, and just stay in them.
Well, I think, you know, this is a loaded sentence, I know, but I don't think everyone's got the same gifts. And
maybe some people are just supposed to put doors on fours.
Yeah, and I know, and that's a horrible thought in a democracy, but as Jung says, nature is aristocratic. And the reason I don't feel so bad saying that is, hope you don't have those gifts. Be happy if you can put doors on fours. Because the more talent you have, the less you can err, and the bigger the price to pay is for erring. So I think if you are well adjusted to life, either you are living your gift or you don't have a gift to live. But I think if you have a gift to live and you're unconscious, something will go wrong. That's the point I was getting to. And then you'll have to either become miserable or seek help.
Going up and going down, it's like that is igniting us.
Yeah. Now, we're going to see, as I said, I think this gets very confusing. Let's just make a note how far we got. John brings the meaning of logos down to man. They're gonna dance around the difference in those two statements, and that's where I get really confused. So either I'm misunderstanding something, or they are misunderstanding. That could be. Remember, Jung is still stumbling here.
In a sense, one's a realization, one's an action.
One's a recognition of what's at stake, and the other is turning that recognition into, what did you say, into an action and an accomplishment.
And thinking about how our pattern fits into a bigger pattern.
Yeah.
The elevation shows how we fit into this bigger pattern. But then, as you said, with the one dream from the dream seminar, he just has to work on his own stride. That's the living it down, defending it down.
Mm-hmm. That's how I get it. Okay. And I know that they go at it a little differently. Maybe we'll come back to it next time and work through it. But, you know, if we're off, I would say we're not going to die. But what we are to get out of this is how Jung was beginning to be confronted with the transcendental aspect of identity. That's what I think, whether we get the particulars right or not, it may not be that important, but that he's beginning to realize, boy, this business of becoming who you are, it comes from somewhere else. The Christians are going to call that God. He'll say, I'm going to call it God, that's fine with me. But I don't have to call it God. What interests me is not where it comes from, but what it's asking of me. And where I would share the care of of the Christian is, I know it is the central question. And I know it is not to be treated reasonably. There's no reason that says if you don't sing, you'll become a murderer. But the irrational fact of life is we see people who ignore it often suffer terrible consequences.
Isn't there a little word called ignorance that can play into this too? People just never see it, never recognize.
Yeah, and well, as I said, I think if you've got it to live and you don't, then you suffer. And certainly, I think it's one of the modern gifts that now we have tools to work with that suffering, where before you didn't. And see, a lot of this was contained by the church, but when the church is no longer efficacious, then this becomes an issue. Well, I didn't say it would be easy. So, hopefully we'll at least get through this next section. Why don't you read over to 273 for next time? I don't know we'll get that far, but in case we would, you'll be prepared.
And we're starting kind of like in the...
Yeah, I'll say, we'll do a little review of this maybe. I'll say we have gotten as far as the end of the paragraph on first column of 269, John brings the meaning of the Logos down to man.
Could we say that the anchorite is another aspect of the lowly one who has died? He's died and now the anchorite shows up. Are they aspects of the same thing?
I think they really are in life, but they're two sides, and Jung has looked at the lowly side, and now he's looking at the higher side. Yes, they belong together, but he's getting it straight in his mind, the extent of each extreme. Okay. That's how I understand.
Does the anchorite die then?
I haven't gotten
that far.
No, I can't. I can only take a couple pages at a time.
I know. I can only take a couple paragraphs.
Yeah, I mean, it's... But I think it's worth digging into. But it's dense. Yeah. I'll see you in 2 weeks, then.